Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. I hope you have been feeling better than I have. You can hear it in my voice. I have indeed been under the weather, and it's been kind of on and off again. It's been really annoying for a few months, just continuing. Now, today's episode is a beta reader debrief. This is back. We recorded this in January of this year, and the interviewee is my sister. She read my manuscript for my first book, and I recorded when she gave me her feedback, and you'll get to hear that. Now, and I'm looking at my notes to remind myself of what I need to mention. But I'm recording this introduction on December 21st, 2024, and I'm going to be pushing out the episode today. So, Merry Christmas! And about this beta reader debrief, you're going to hear some of the, at least in my sister's view, and my commentary as well, some of the weaknesses and strengths of an earlier draft of my first book. And after this episode, let me know if you've read the book. Let me know if you think that in the final draft I addressed her concerns, or if I decided that they weren't important, or if maybe I just forgot to address them. Let me know what you think. This is my sister, and we had some conversations while I was writing the book, so she was privy to some privileged information, and you may hear some hints about things coming in the future of the series. So, spoilers, I guess. Be advised that there may be spoilers. If you really don't want any spoilers, then after the announcement section, just go ahead and skip the rest of this episode. But I think it can be interesting. Also, since, as I said before, this is from an earlier draft, some things changed. And this is before book one was completely written, let alone book two. So for anything not yet in a published book, in other words, beyond book two, for anything upcoming in the series, I reserve the right to change whatever, you know? So don't hold your breath, I guess. Maybe if you've read book one, then take all the spoilers here with a grain of salt, because they could change. Now, that's we'll get to that interview in a moment. For current events, you know, kind of the purpose I'm recording this intro, this is the first separately recorded intro I've recorded since before, since September, but specifically before the end of October when book two was released. This is the first intro where I'm letting you know that book two is out. It's published. It's out in the world. I mentioned it in the episode with S.H. Blodgett because that was recorded after the book was out. But this is the first intro where, yeah, I'm just talking to you, dear listener. I'm sorry, I'm awkward. That's how I am, so deal with it. We have some announcements to catch up on. Some news is brand new, and some of it is, getting to be a couple of months old. Up first, Nightshade Unicorn Book 2, Guardian, is indeed published and out in the world. You can get it on ebook, paperback, and hardcover in a lot of different places. On Amazon, through Drafted Digital, Drafted Digital is a distributor to various different storefronts. You can order it from Barnes & Noble, from Walmart.com. It's not going to be on shelves because I'm small potatoes, but you can order it. Now, it is, it's December 21st. It's too late to order a physical copy and have it arrive in time for Christmas. But you should know that currently you can get 25% off of either book one or book two in all three formats, ebook, hardcover, and paperback, if you order it from me directly. And that you do that by going to grendhill.media. And, you know, if you want to put https://www. You can. Most browsers these days will add that as necessary. But the web address is grendhill.media. There's no .com or .net or .org. It's .media. grendhill.media. Fill your shopping cart with whatever you want. And at the checkout, add the coupon with the code end of year. No spaces. ENDOFYEAR. End of year. And that expires December 31st. So if you want the 25% off, go ahead and order now over the next week and a half. And shipping is included. And honestly, that's mostly because I haven't figured out how to add shipping into the whole process. So instead, I have... if I had, I would have put a deeper discount on the books, and then you would have had to pay for shipping. But since I haven't, I'm accounting for shipping. It's built in already. You can get 25% off. You do have to pay tax. But then that's the end of the story. So grendhill.media, 25% off with the code end of year. There is currently one way to get my books for cheaper than that. And that is in person from me. So if you happen to be in Northern Virginia, you can buy from me in person. Paperbacks will be $15, hardcovers will be $20, which is, it's a good cheap price. Today you can catch me at the Town Center Branch Mall, library. I can't talk. I'm doing library signing events, and today's library is the one that is inside the Town Center Mall in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And I will be there from 3:15 to 5 p.m. If you can't make it to me today, because honestly, that is short notice, you can come see me on Monday, December 23rd. This is my last in-person appearance of the year at Newton Branch Library from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. I'm going to tell you what town that's in. Newton Branch Library. Pulling it up. Excuse me. Hague, Virginia. 22 Coles Point Road in Hague, Virginia. It's a little remote. It is. So, you know, pick your poison. If you want to see me today, you can do that at a more convenient location. But short notice. If you want more notice, then you can come out and see me at the Newton Branch Library in Hague, Virginia on Monday the 23rd. Again, that's from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Today is 3:15 to 5 p.m. And if you can't do that, but you do want to take advantage of this discount, excuse me, you can get ebooks. That will always be instantaneous. You buy the ebook. You can download it within a minute, and you can get it from Amazon or various other online retailers, or you can get it from me at grendhill.media. And again, that code end of year will give you a 25% discount, and it's delivered via BookFunnel. If you're not familiar with BookFunnel, it's a pretty nifty tool, and they will give you instructions on how to import it into your Kindle. So if you read everything on your Kindle in the app or on a Kindle device, you can buy it from me direct for 25% off and then still load it onto your Kindle. Now, if you want additional updates of things going on, you can always join my newsletter, which is not always it's not the fastest way to find out about things, because I don't send it every day, you know. My intent is every other week on Friday. I'm a little inconsistent with that. So if you really want the most in the newsletter, just so you know, it's thorn.link/grendhill/newsletter. I'll change the URL later, but right now that's where it is. thorn.link/grendhill/newsletter to sign up for that. Or you can go to pedramon.com and find a link there. But if you really want the most up-to-date news and the most open connection with me, jump in my Discord server because I'm in there on a daily basis. And I'll include the link to my Discord server in the show notes of today's episode. And now for additional news, things actually like happening. I'm going to my first, well, no, not technically my first. I'm going to a con in February. I say not my first because I went to CRRL Con back in May. It was a pretty low key thing in the local library system, but it called itself a con. Okay, I'll take it. So my second con will be in February. If you want specifics about that, you can either wait and find out, or you can jump into my Discord server, and I'll tell you in there. Otherwise, yeah, and more cons are in the works, but this one in February is signed up. They've approved me to come as a vendor to sell my books. I've paid the fee. It's all set. My travel is not set yet, but I'll figure that out. Now, for again, specific information, jump into my Discord. Otherwise, that information will be publicized on the podcast, via newsletter, etc., as we get closer to the event. And I've been yabbering for 11 and a half, almost 12 minutes, so I'm going to hold any other updates for future episodes of the podcast for now. Let's get into that interview without further ado. Hi. So, in case this ever does get used as an episode on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast, I am your host, Don Bishop, and I'm here with my sister, Julianne Roan, and we're going to discuss her beta read feedback for my book. So I wrote a book, she read the book, and now she's going to tear me apart with her feedback. Or she's going to say, it's awesome! And equate it to Pretty Patties, if you've watched that episode of SpongeBob. The best thing ever. Or the best idea ever. For context, I wrote a YA or a young adult epic fantasy novel, first novel in a series. If you're listening to the podcast, you've probably heard me talk about it before. So this is Forerunner. This is book one in the Nightshade Unicorn series. And it's to date the only book I've written yet, but I'm publishing it next month and I'm working on writing book two. And so just so everybody knows what beta reading is, I wrote the book and now, like, I did some cleaning up edits and I'm like, okay, let me put this in front of some kind of audience and see what they say before I publish it. So that gives me the opportunity to fix things that might need to be fixed. And so what I said, so I push it out through the BookFunnel app or platform, and I said to everybody, because I sent it out to like 25 people ish. Maybe you've done a beta read before, but in case you haven't, it's important to know what I'm looking for. It's not about typos. If you spot one, sure, let me know, but look at it like this. My goal is to publish a novel that both entices and fulfills. A reader should be drawn in, pulled through the book, and be left feeling good, but wanting more soon. If my book doesn't do that, I'm interested in knowing that, and I'm interested in knowing where the problems are so I can fix them. There are a few different ways to look at it. Some authors send out their beta reads in a Word document with track changes turned on. Some even send out questionnaires. I'm not trying to make it feel like homework, so let's do this. I'll give you a few questions to consider and a little list of ABCs. Then you have at it, and you come back and tell me what you think. So, questions to consider: does this story engage you? Is the pacing good? Do any sections drag? Are the characters interesting? Is the setting or world interesting? Do the characters behave consistent or believably? Is there or consistently or believably? Is there enough mystery throughout the story, or do I overexplain or reveal too much too soon? Is there anything missing? Now, with that said, let's make it super easy with ABCs. The easier it is, the more people will finish the beta read and get feedback back to me. So while you're reading, just make a note somewhere. If you really notice that something is awesome, boring, confusing, dumb, exciting, or favorite. One final thing, don't filter your feedback. Be openly honest. I have some specific insecurities about the book and some specific things I love about it. You'll either confirm an insecurity and I'll know that I need to rework that part, or you'll reassure me that I don't need to worry about it, or your collective feedback will tell me it's ready for publication. I have a thick skin about it, specific insecurities included, and I'm sending this to enough people that I reserve the right to be arrogant and disregard it if a minority of readers hate a particular scene or aspect. But if there's a trend of people hating the same thing about the book, I'll know I need to be humble and fix that thing. So don't filter. After you've read, please send your feedback to me in email with beta in the subject line. I gave some instructions there. We're flexible. It's fine. Whatever. So I say that I have a thick skin about it. I certainly hope to and try to, and I try to be humble and listen. Even if you tell me something that, you know, I really thought that was the other way around. And I have a shield here that, whenever somebody is too critical, I'll be like, my 12-year-old read it and she loved it so much. She came and ordered me to write the next book already. Okay, Julianne, I don't want to poison the well. I was going to mention something that somebody else already said, but I don't want to touch your feedback before you deliver it to me.
Okay. Well, first off, I do like the book, Don.
Yay!
I did enjoy it. It was fun. I do have some criticism.
Oh, you Nazi. Man. You're a Nazi. Where's the sticky note that I was using to... Well, I'll make a new one.
I guess that was the first thing that you've already had feedback from that I know of that about the shipwreck. So I guess I won't mention that further since you've already talked about that.
One more thing. For anybody listening to this, there will most likely be spoilers in this episode if you haven't read this book. There could be spoilers for this book. There could be spoilers for the series. I'll try to hold those in reserve. But Julianne has read the whole book, and she will give me the criticism that I need to hear. So you are fully warned. All right. Sorry. Go on, Julianne.
That's fine. So going on to the next thing, I guess, because you already wrote the shipwreck scene.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yes.
Yeah, I did.
So, sorry, I have my notes on my phone, so I'm looking at that.
Okay.
So there's this part where Hronimon tells Eleva, you must also be untouched by magic prior to forging this bond.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm wondering if I shouldn't mention this part here.
No, do it.
Okay.
Are you catching a possible plot hole here?
Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe not. Just depends on what your intentions are. Because knowing what I know that Alava doesn't know yet about her ancestry, because we've talked about this before, is she not touched by magic?
Yeah, that's a... I see why you paused. Well, okay. Maybe I should rephrase that.
Yeah, maybe. Because
We'll leave that nice and vague for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was like, maybe I shouldn't mention this right now.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Listener, beware.
Yes. Oh, there was a thing that I had sent you that one day that we never talked about because it was a Sunday. Then I was like, oh, wait, we're not going to do this right now.
Oh, yeah.
It seems weird to me that she empties her water skin, you know, by drinking it three times before going on, just to avoid extra stops. Because if you drink that much water, you're going to have to pee soon, which causes an extra stop.
Well, I will counter that and explain it away by two things. One is finding somewhere to get water from is not as easy as stopping to pee.
Okay.
So stopping to pee takes less time.
Okay.
But also with the amount of walking she's doing some sweating and won't need to pee as much. Often but as you would if you're sitting on your couch just chugging water.
She's also walking at nighttime when it's cold. Is she doing that much sweating?
Yeah.
Okay.
Less sweating than as if it were hot, but you sweat in the cold. It's like when you go swimming, you need to tell yourself to drink water because you sweat in the pool. You just don't realize it because
you're already wet.
You're already wet and cool.
Okay. Let's go to the next one then, I guess. So the part where Alava got abducted, she didn't see the rope that tripped her, but, and then she assumed it was rock. Like, the way that it's phrased in the book, it says Alava didn't see the rope that tripped her. I don't know what the exact wording was, but that's what it said. Alava didn't see the rope that tripped her, and then after she falls, she assumes that it was a rock. And if you're doing this from, like, Alava's point of view...
Yeah, it wouldn't feel like it. Oh, go on.
If you're doing this from, like, Alava's point of view, I know that it's not first person, but most third-person books are still done from a certain character's point of view. You wouldn't say that she didn't see the rope before you said that she assumed it was a rock. Uh-huh. Or you just don't put in the she assumed it was a rock at all. Either one, I had an example here. I said maybe something like, Alava fell hard and she thought she tripped over a rock she didn't see. That is, until she tried to get up and discovered a rope looped around her ankle and pulled taut. A shape formed, dot, dot, dot. But that was my example of maybe something that you could rewrite that to. Yeah, it just was weird to me that the rope was mentioned before she knew that, before the rock was mentioned, you know? I think if you took one of them out, it's fine. She didn't notice the rope that tripped her.
Okay.
With no mention of rock, or Alava tripped over a rock and then realized it was a rope. Mm-hmm. But also a rope wouldn't feel like a rock, so I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Here's another one here. And most of my criticism isn't criticism about the book as a whole. There is some of that. Uh-huh. Most of it's just like certain parts and maybe how.
Well, can we talk about the book as a whole?
Yeah. Okay. Let me just think. I know I wrote some of it down. Let me find it really quick.
Okay.
Maybe I didn't write it down. Maybe I just thought I would remember it. So I do feel like you over-explain in some parts. Like, Alava's just thinking about what things might be like, or what she's introspecting about the world as she doesn't know it, basically.
Uh-huh.
And it's just kind of like, there's too much going on inside her head and not enough of her seeing and experiencing.
Okay. That's interesting. Cause I've gotten a little bit of feedback saying that, we want to get in her head more, but, and at first glance, it seems like, well, people have different opinions and I'm somewhere in the middle, so I'm not too bad off, but maybe they're really trying to say the same thing, because one said that it's too mechanical and not enough emotional.
Right.
And you're pointing out that we want to experience with her more rather than analyze it with her.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Don't analyze it with her. Experience it with her. Another thing about the book as a whole is kind of the whole book just feels like the same person talking. And it sounds like you, Don. I know you very well, so I can say that, but it sounds like you.
Uh-huh.
Alava sounds like you, Hronimon sounds like you, and they talk exactly the same way. And Alava, okay. Hronimon's been living for centuries and centuries, a long, 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 long time. And Alava has lived, she's 18, she grew up in this one little town. She should talk differently from Hronimon.
Okay.
And that might not be something that you can fix right now in, you know, this first book, maybe. I don't know. But that's something that I noticed. Also, everybody talks to Alava sort of in the same way. Little girl, girly, all that yeah. stuff. Everybody says, like, the same kind of thing. The, you know, Nillin and the doctor. And I think there was somebody else who did the same thing. I was like, this is a little bit weird that everybody's doing the same. They're all different words, but it's like the same thing.
They're, yeah. I mean, my counter argument for academic's sake would be that those guys are traveling together. They have their tiny little subculture that they subscribe to, you know, and so they behave largely like each other. However, probably not to that degree.
So, the first person who did it was Nillin, and he calls Alava a little girl all the time, and it feels really creepy, and I was going to mention that, but then I thought, maybe that's just his vibe. He's a creepy guy, calling her little girl all the time. But then I saw other people doing similar things, and...
Okay.
So...
Yeah, that's a good point, because you mentioned that's creepy. Lets me know what to think about, because, like, yeah, I do kind of want that vibe with Nillin and with, what are their names? Halman and...
The tea guy? I don't remember his name.
Yeah, the one who is usually with Halman, but not as smart.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember his name either.
Anyway, okay. I have a bad memory. I made up this name. Oh, Tunbloth. Tunbloth.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, but they should have their own flavors of it. Maybe I should get some, like, character portraits of all of them and practice talking like each one of them and then go through and change their lines to match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think. I guess this isn't really criticism, but I was just mentioning the scene where with the rock slide, we had talked about that beforehand, and I don't know why, but I had just assumed it was going to happen earlier in the book, like when she leaves the town. And I thought it was funny because I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, he never did the rock slide. And then, like, a few pages later, Hronimon mentioned the Riven Scree, and I was like, oh, we just haven't gotten to it yet.
Uh-huh. So, you thought it was going to happen earlier.
Yeah, I mean,
was there any particular reason?
No, I don't know. Maybe because we talked about how they were following her out of town or something. But it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of the book. We just... Because I had talked about with the book with you beforehand, before it was fully written, and so that's just what the impression that I had. It's okay. Not a big deal.
Yeah. No, it's just
it's
interesting.
Good where it is. It makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I learned a new word. Well, I learned... Yeah. Scree? That's a word I didn't know. But that's... I didn't make up that word. That's...
Oh, I know. I think I mentioned it to you to begin with.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'd seen it before in books, the Scree. I've never used it or seen it used in, heard it used in real life before.
Okay, what else?
Seen it in books before. Let's see. Let me look at my notes.
Look at these little cards I got.
Oh, I like it.
In the back.
That's cool.
Yeah. Well, I made them. I printed them at home. We have some cardstock.
Okay.
And we have not the best paper cutter, so you see the edge. Is...
yeah.
But you know what? It kind of feels nice with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So these are like when people, when it comes up that like, I'm writing.
Yeah. Here.
That I'm publishing a book. Yeah,
check
you know,
it out.
Here.
Yeah. That's cool. I like it.
I can say like, go here. There's a thing that says about the author and you can send me an email. And anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, I think I had mentioned this to you already, but I'm going to do it on camera too. At the beginning of the book, people talk about the Nightshade Unicorn as, you know, the scary thing. And even, I don't remember his name. Alava's dad. Sorry. Do they know that? I don't remember if they know that in the book.
Not in book one. Not in book one.
I'm sorry. Anyway, when the sailor at the beginning.
Her dad's not a sailor.
The merchant. Yes.
Well, yeah, so there's this merchant. His name is Tylonus. Has nothing to do with Alava at all.
Tylonus. At the beginning, he hears stories about the Nightshade Unicorn. I feel like that's kind of pounded into the reader, and that's fine. It doesn't feel like over the top, but it feels like it's pounded into the reader that, you know, the Nightshade Unicorn is, it's this real thing and it's bad, and then he sees the Nightshade Unicorn, he's like, oh my gosh, it really is real!
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, see, I think all of that is okay. I'm not, no criticism about that, but it's just at the end, when Alava sees a Nightshade Unicorn, it's just like, oh, the Nightshade Unicorn is it's very anticlimactic. It's the Nightshade Unicorn. Oh, he just must be the Stronglin. And it's anticlimactic. I was expecting more terror from her.
Okay, so I should, yeah. And somebody mentioned to me in the last couple of days, maybe I saw it in our aunt's feedback. One of our Ants is in the beta reader group, and I've been, she asked me if she could go through the manuscript. I gave her a Google Docs link, and so I see activity in my email whenever she goes in there and puts comments. So maybe she put it in, but anyway, I don't think it was her, but sorry, I'm talking over myself. Somebody mentioned that. Yeah, somebody else mentioned that. Yeah, it's kind of anticlimactic. And so I think I just need to kind of draw that out. And we need to see him acting tough and looking scary before he turns around and then behaves himself.
Right, or like, and some...
I get it, because we never see him do anything until he's already good.
Right.
We need to see him do something.
And some terror on Alava's part. Like, he rushes in and kills the wolves, and Alava's just sitting there, like, frozen in terror because the Nightshade Unicorn is real. And then he turns on her. And, I don't know, soils her pants or something.
I need to, I need to play it up, actually. At risk of making it even more anticlimactic, I need to play up the scary aspect. Like I have it thought that I'm gonna add in at least one conversation or part of a conversation with the disaffected, that they're hoping that their boss can turn the Nightshade Unicorn to their side, because that like they'll talk about him as he's a wild card.
Uh-huh.
They don't know he's actually good either. I could say that. Like, they don't know he's good. Maybe they do know he's good, but they don't reveal that to Alava at any rate. But they hope that he can be turned. Because Sakala's been bashing at him for the last 4,000 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he can be turned and fight for us and get rid of all the other nasty unicorns.
Maybe. I don't... unless you have, you know, a way in your head, that's fine. But I don't see how they would even know to think that. Like, because
she does.
I know that she does. But how do the disaffected know this? You know.
So there's a disaffected boss, right, in the encampment. Whatever I'm telling you, I should make a note of intentionally including it or withholding it. So disaffected conversation about hopefully turning the Nightshade Unicorn to their side. There is a D boss, a disaffected boss in the encampment. I should give the encampment a name. And they've spoken to other disaffected before. And, you know, they've like sat around the campfire with other disaffected before, and word has come down that the boss is hoping that the real boss coming out of her prison, she's going to come and rid the world of these evil nightshade, these evil unicorns, these twisted unicorns that appear like they're good. And she hopes to turn. Anyway, okay. Yeah, okay. Go on.
Okay. Let's see. I guess there's not really anything else more about the book as a whole, but there's some more, like, nitty-gritty criticisms, I guess.
Okay.
The beginning of chapter 13, which is titled Disaffected, it says, she was woken by the sun in her eyes. Hold on. Now I need to know what it actually says. Let me look it up really quick.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm going to...
I'm also going to open the file.
Chapter 13. Go disaffected. Okay. It says, Alava woke up several hours later after a chilled and fitful sleep, still lying in the wagon. And then in the second paragraph, it says she was woken by the sun in her eyes.
Hmm.
I feel like either one of those is fine, but not in separate paragraphs.
Combine them somehow.
Yeah, I believe I put an example. Yeah, maybe Alava was woken by the sun several hours later after a chilly and fitful sleep, blinking and squinting, ... Yeah, it's combined those somehow, because it was weird having those two in separate paragraphs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so you do sometimes write out thoughts in italics, which is fine. Lots of people do that. It felt weird to me just because the first time it happens is pretty late in the book. You know?
Uh-huh.
And it just, it seemed out of place to me, just because of how late in the book we see thoughts for the first time.
Okay. So maybe I should throw that in during Greenstone Observance or...
Yeah, something like that.
Perhaps even prior.
There's a lot of thoughts. Right. Also, I think you used italics for both her thoughts and also for a flashback. And I know it seems it'd be hard to figure out a different format to do those two different things, but if maybe it's just me, but it feels like they should be in different formats. You know what I mean?
Okay. So but
italics might be fine too, because from context clues you can tell that she's not thinking to herself the flashback, you know? Or maybe
I'll look up the proper style.
I don't know. Okay. at the end, when they are fighting the people on the trail with the Binturox. Is that what it's called? Binturox?
Yeah. Yeah. Binturox.
And the Binturox is already dead, but she's got, I think the crossbowman shoots a bolt at her. Maybe it was the bowman. I don't remember. But, and it like hits her, you know, glances her, hits her head, and then it gets stuck in her skull. And I.
In her scalp.
Right. Or in her scalp.
Maybe.
Well, it probably says scalp. But I also am not, and unsure how an arrow would get stuck so hard in your skull or scalp that you can't like easily pull it out. Unless it's like the arrowhead is all the way in which case her brain would be punctured.
Well, I could totally see it. Like it's so I should decide exactly what's going on there.
Would include
some research to make sure it's a viable thing.
Yes.
But I imagine, and I'll remove the imagine. I imagine that you totally could. Like it could pierce a little bit of skull and get wedged.
Yeah, maybe. Do some research on that and see the viability.
If it's slower, it could glance off the scalp and dig itself under, it glance off the skull and dig itself under the scalp.
Maybe. How big are you picturing this arrowhead? Because it might just be picturing very different arrowheads.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the problem.
What kind of arrowhead? What type of arrow?
Because I don't know. Maybe you're picturing maybe you're just picturing like the type of arrowhead that we have on arrows today that are just this little tiny metal thing that's pointy on the end. You know?
No, not so tiny.
And that's not what I'm picturing. You know, picturing the typical triangle arrowhead, which. I can't picture how that would get stuck, but I haven't done any research or anything, you know. But I also thought maybe it does, you know, it hits her, but then it goes through her hood and it gets tangled in her hood. And that's why she can't pull it out at first. But that's, you know.
Another factor because I did it. I don't remember if it hit her hood.
I'm pretty sure it did.
Binturox. He was faster than she thought, and the next thing she knew was a sudden headache as the man's next arrow deflected off her hood, tearing the fabric of her hood. So how is it deflecting off her hood?
If it deflected off the hood, it wouldn't have hit her head.
Head. I think I said head. And the dictation software put in hood.
Oh, maybe. But also, if it deflected off of her head, it wouldn't have gotten stuck. And
piercing her scalp just above the forehead.
Right. I think it either deflects or it gets stuck.
But not piercing deeply into her... So I'll rewrite that paragraph somehow.
Good.
You haps? You happy?
Yes. I guess I don't have anything else in my notes.
Okay.
I did find several typos that I can send you separately. Actually, some of them might not have been typos. Let me look them up to make sure they were all typos and not just something that I was noting.
I know of at least 3/4.
Sometimes I was just taking screenshots, but usually that was just for typos.
Yeah. There were at least 4, typographical errors. One was the lack of a scene break in the prologue. Two were the dictation software putting knock an arrow with a K instead of N-O-C-K. And one was peace instead of peace.
I noticed that one. I found that one.
Yeah.
I didn't notice
the
knock
one.
About. Yeah. I'll send you... Oh, well, that's another... It's not really a plot thing. It was another thing about how, is a lava really going to be thinking these words? Where...
character plausibility or consistency.
She felt weakness in her quadriceps. And, like, I wouldn't think that.
Okay. Quadriceps is outside the aesthetic. Got it. And maybe, yeah, maybe inconsistent. Unless she's had some medical training, which I did not indicate. So, you wouldn't expect for the, you know, they don't have any electronics. I don't mention anybody with, anyway. So yeah, you wouldn't expect them to know such a word.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, there was a part where, I took a screenshot of the arrow part.
Okay.
So where I circled this one part where I just noted that it was weird. So it says it caught there, transferring its kinetic energy to knocking her back. And I thought that was...
Okay,
that was weird. Just say it knocked her back. The motion knocked her back.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I know, but the book doesn't have to be as pedantic as you are, Dawn.
Yeah.
I know that's what happened. But yeah. Yep, there's the piece. It looks like most things are...
brutal. Be brutal. Don't filter.
I'll say it looks like most of the screenshots that I took really are just... typos, or where I think where a word doesn't make sense and it must be something else. I need to ask you about it.
Well, here
I
am.
Why did I take a screenshot of that?
Where? What?
I didn't make any notes on it. It's just a screenshot. It says, I suppose Chronomon isn't anywhere nearby. Or, oh, this must be the first time you see her thoughts. I suppose Chronomon isn't anywhere nearby, or I would have nicer weather right now. That's probably why I took that screenshot. And then I just put it in my notes instead of writing it on there or anything.
Okay. Yeah. Go on.
This part where I think Hieronymon's explaining something to her, and he says the compact requires a human who can come under her own power. And I was like, what does he mean by compact? And I thought, do you mean contract? Or does he mean compact? Because I think that's the first time we see the word compact.
Compact. It is the only time you see the word compact. So let me see. Now it says construct.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, I think everything else is typos or
Typos.
A word doesn't need to be, or where I think a word should be. So I don't think you necessarily need that here. Okay. Oh, there's a place where you use the word qualitatively, and I also thought that was weird. A few hours later, Alava woke again, this time feeling qualitatively improved in her being.
Okay, I'll consider that one. I reserve the right
to
decide you're wrong.
Yeah, it's fine, a weird wording.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'll send you the rest.
You don't think a farm girl can be edumacated?
It's not that I don't think that. It's that you didn't imply that she is.
Good point.
So the first impression is that no, I don't think a farm girl would be nearly that educated. If you want her to be, you should put it in there that she is. Okay. Otherwise, write her that she's not.
Okay. Just a moment. Hawthorne, no puedes venir aquí ahora.
Vine para darte una pluma.
No. No pases por ahí. Oh. Es que se puede tumbar el micrófono. Okay. Dame la pluma después, por favor. Estoy haciendo una llamada y estoy grabando.
Silencio.
Silencio, sí. No, porque si ven... Ay, amor. Vení. Pero no por aquí. Aquí.
¿Por dónde?
Aquí. Sí, pásate. Ahí. I have a visitor.
Yes, I can hear that.
He's a cute visitor, but I told him that I was going to be busy and he shouldn't come. Oh, wow.
Hay muchas plumas ahí.
Sí, muchas plumas. You brought me a little feather from the parakeet. ¿Para mí?
Sí.
Me la dejo.
No, estoy en la otra.
Oh, okay.
Y tengo muchas de ese tipo.
Necesito que salgas, por favor.
Unos 20. Hay una más.
Mhm.
Ay.
Just a minute, okay? Ay.
Oh. Qué linda, gracias. Hawthorne. Decirle hi, Aunt Julianne. Es tu tía.
Hi, Hawthorne.
Es tu tía, es mi hermana.
Look, all these feathers.
He has feathers inside his little recycling truck.
That's awesome.
Okay, hold on, con permiso. Te veo después.
And it has... But it's not one car.
It's not what?
One.
It's not one car?
No.
You have other cars.
With a street.
Oh yeah, you have a set and it has a street that you can drive the cars on. Okay, cerrame la puerta, por favor.
And it has lugares de reuniones.
Well. Lugar de avión is place of airplane, but that's... It has a helipad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where a helicopter can land.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hasta luego, Hawthorne.
Hasta luego. Yo tengo ojos muy
malos. Hawthorne, con permiso, yeah.
Yo voy a hacer esta puerta y la otra
puerta. Oh, okay. Hasta luego, amor. Okay.
Just noticed, I like this. You have a picture of the temple right next to a poster of Sonic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they are strategically placed with that size gap.
So that your head can fit right in the middle.
So I'm right in between. I don't want to have a boring wall behind me.
Right.
And so, well, there's room for the temple. That's a good picture. And there's room for Sonic. I like Sonic. That's cool. And there's me in the middle. Yeah.
So, remember we had talked about something happening at the end that didn't happen, and I guess I'm just wondering if you decided to put it in the beginning of the next book, like, or maybe just cut it out altogether?
Like a different ending?
Sort of.
Or you mean like an epilogue? Te voy a sacar y voy a trancar la puerta. Give me just a minute. ¿Quieres que te ponga esta aquí? Ok. No vengas aquí ahora, por favor.
Cuando quiero jugar con eso en otro día, puedes ponérmelo en colina.
Ok. Sí. Hasta luego. Okay.
I did see at the end that you were writing an epilogue, and I forgot about that. So maybe it's in there.
Well, so, okay, let's just, listeners, spoiler alert, okay? This could be potentially a book spoiler or a series spoiler. But, I mean, series spoilers have already happened in this conversation.
Sorry.
by the way, Julianne, I'm picturing that that maybe this episode will come out shortly before book two comes out.
Okay.
So, yeah, maybe.
Everybody would have had ample chance to read the first book.
Yes. But then series spoilers, they're just hints.
You can cut them out if you need to.
They're just hints. And I can, like, I haven't written them yet. I have ideas, and I have ideas written down, but I don't have things, outlined out. I've been trying to outline book two, and the world keeps happening at me. I'm like almost there to outlining book two and the rest of the series. And once I do that, I'll be able to, rip through, I think. And so I've promised book two will come out this year, and I may have promised, but I fully expect book three also to come out this year.
That's fast.
Anyway, the thing is, I have not written them yet. So any series spoilers, could be changed, so just forget about it.
It's true.
Okay, so listener, beware, there may be a serious spoiler here. So what thing was I suggesting?
The might thing happen was Tylonus showing up at the end.
Oh yeah.
In the epilogue?
Yeah, I need to write that.
Okay.
It's January 25th. My book epilogue is launching on February 28th. But wait, there's more. My Kickstarter campaign ends in 6 days, and they're getting the book ahead of the launch. That means that all of these things need to be fixed ahead of February 28th.
So hurry up. Yeah.
I will. Like that's the focus, next week is to incorporate all the beta reader feedback. That's why I'm cutting it off. I sent that email. Yeah. At the end of this week. So, yeah, the Tylonus, he has to come back. How could he not? I've had many people telling me after reading the prologue and then getting into the book beyond that, they're like,
Where's Tylonus?
There's Tylonus, and we got interested in him, and here's the Nightshade Unicorn, and then we never see him again. Well, you will.
But wait,
and
there's more.
I need
more
to fix it. He will come back in book one in the epilogue. You see him in the prologue, you'll see him in the epilogue. And you'll see him
in book two?
You'll see him in book two, maybe in epilogue and prologue, but I do believe he'll be... Yeah, he has to. Book two is going to have lots of POV going on, whereas book one has one in the prologue. It will have the same one in the epilogue, and it has one throughout the rest of the book. You know, it's very simple as far as POV structure goes. Yeah. Book two is going to have to open up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll be like the Animorphs. We have one POV per book, and it's a different character for the POV each book.
Yeah. Not to get off topic, but that's something that I've been having trouble with in my own writing, is points of view and making sure you're staying in the same person's point of view during an entire scene. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's all I have. I think overall, the book is great. You know, I'm excited to see the launch. I'm excited to, I guess, read your updated version after, you know, maybe incorporating your feedback or not incorporating it as you decide. You know,
yeah,
and seeing what we get from it.
Yeah, well, thank you. So I have three of our cousins in the beta reader pool. And I don't want to call anyone out in case they don't want to be mentioned on the podcast. I'll totally tell you in private, but two of them have finished it. One of them has not. And one of them said, what did she say? I'm gonna mention what she said. So one of them, and maybe you'll know instantly who this is, but he's apparently not loving it, but he's also a huge Dune fan, and this book is very much not Dune. So I guess I'm okay with him not loving it. I would love for him to love it, but if that's not his cup of tea, then whatever. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned to, well, I've mentioned to some people, actually, I think in the last, group BCC email I sent to the beta readers, I said, maybe you don't like it and that's fine. I want to know. And there's three possibilities here. Well, four there that, one is maybe I have things I definitely need to fix about the book. Two is, well, maybe you're just not really one of my readers, and that's okay. People like different things, and you don't have to like my thing. Three is maybe both. Maybe I do have things to fix. Thanks for finding them. And also, well, now I know not to target your population. And then I don't remember what the fourth thing was. But okay, so another one said that overall it is pretty good. Here's some more specific thoughts. So she said overall it's pretty good. And then another one, I felt like he was just tearing me apart as I read it. And I'm so glad that I asked him not to filter. I asked everybody not to filter, and he didn't. He didn't tell me he hated it and it was a dumb book and why did I do that. You know, he didn't berate me, but he made a lot of criticisms that definitely had some ground. But at the same time, I'm reading in here like, you know, maybe you're just not really my audience. Mm-hmm. Turns out when he read my book, he had just finished listening to the Silmarillion. And so like he set his standard way up high. And here I come. It's the first book I've ever written all the way through. And he's coming off of the Silmarillion with this really rich world, which I would love to write. But I'm not there yet. Or maybe I don't have to be there. Because I talked to him over the phone a few days ago. It was on Friday. But he himself pointed out that that Tolkien didn't like Narnia.
Right.
You know, like, and a lot of people really love Narnia, those books. But Tolkien, he's like, you know, C.S. Lewis, you're my friend. I support you. You've got some interesting ideas here. But he criticized like having a fawn and Santa Claus in the same work. Like, no. That's like Greek mythology, and then here's Christianity. Like, no. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely people who's not going to be your audience. Not everybody likes everything, and that's okay.
Yeah. So, you know, if I were C.S. Lewis receiving that criticism from Tolkien, I think it would be upon me to take a step back and think about whether I really do want to have the fawn and Santa Claus in the same work here, in the same world. Mm-hmm. And, well, he decided he did. And it was published like that, and a lot of people loved it. So that's fine. It's just different people like different things.
Got Angeli the Chronicles of Narnia for Christmas, and she likes it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. Good. You gonna hand her Forerunner when it comes in?
Maybe.
Well, you know, you read it. You know what's in it.
No, I'm fine with her reading it. I just want to keep my book nice, you know?
Yeah.
Well, then just I'll probably let her read it.
Hand her your phone and let her read the ebook. Okay. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited. There's still a lot of work to be done with editing, with including the feedback that I decide needs to be incorporated or reflected in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess we'll stop the recording now. And all of you guys out there in internet land and podcast land, you must be hearing this because book two is coming out soon. So, go to nightshadeunicorn.com and maybe I'll run another Kickstarter campaign. I should like to think that I will. So check that out. And, if not, you know, you can go to that same website, nightshadeunicorn.com, and, find out where you can order it. Maybe you'll be able to order it right there. I would love to be able to set that up. Just, you know, that's another time premium. Anyway, so Julianne, if you can stay on, I want to talk to you a little bit more. I will show you the cover art that is close to being done. I can't share it outside. I can't show right. it publicly yet because it's not mine yet. I sent it back to the artist last night with a little bit of feedback, like tweak this or that. And I am hoping to have it within the week, which would be slightly early, right?
Well, yeah, Don.
Slightly early.
If this podcast has come out before book two, nobody's going to see the artwork until you own it.
Everybody out there in podcast land, you can go and see it right now. Also, oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. No, but I can't show it to you. I can't show it to you on air because I'm going to show you what the artist showed me that are not completed renderings, and that's not won't be mine.
I get that.
What will be mine will be the finished render of
the
official book cover. So, yeah. You guys in podcast land, you'll be able to find that at Nightshade Unicorn. Maybe I'll leave this card here. If you're watching the video, that's actually AI art that I'm using in the meantime until I have the official artwork. Maybe I'll leave the AI art there for historical reasons. I am for the Kickstarter campaign. There is some AI art that will go out with the Kickstarter campaign. I don't know if you looked through everything carefully, but the bookmarks, the character bookmarks or the scene overlays, those exist. And in the Kickstarter campaign, it's clearly marked that this will be AI generated artwork. But the cover art will not be, I set the funding goal at $500 because I'm just trying to get the money to, I hired the artist for X amount of dollars and, I want to buy the full rights so I can use the imagery for whatever I want. And so $500 is more than the set price for me to, it's an option. I can, if I want, buy the full rights for this much more, for X much more, you know? So I set the funding goal just like a little higher than that. And right now the campaign is at 1,000 and some odd dollars. So it's 209% funded, which is great. I forgot what I was going to say though. What was the point I was getting to?
I don't know.
Oh, right. With that kind of money, there is not funding to go and hire out multiple pieces of character art and scene art for those bookmarks and overlays. So those will go out with the Kickstarter extras that people have already ordered when they pledged. Anyway, so we'll stop the recording and we'll talk a little bit more after that. So you guys out there, check it out, nightshadeunicorn.com, and we'll see you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast.